Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and your host. That's me, Link Flores. Hope you guys are having a good week. And boy, is it about to get nuts. let's go ahead and get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way. First things first, before we get into the podcast, which you may have noticed has been a little late. First and foremost, thank you to everyone who's been listening to the podcast for, we're almost at a year now. It won't be too much longer here. We'll be at a full year of podcasting, which I'm really excited about. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who's been listening. Thank you to everyone who's shared it, who's been following it on Patreon. Even if you haven't responded, I appreciate you guys for doing whatever you can to support the podcast. It makes a lot of this stuff a little easier to do every week. And hopefully going forward, as I'm going to be starting to promote more outside, when I go out and about, getting some business cards and things of that nature put together, and hopefully I'll be having some guest appearances. I'm going to try to push for getting this podcast monetized, which means I may end up putting at least a version of it on YouTube or something like that. I'm not sure. But I definitely am looking for sponsors for the podcast. So I just want to let you guys know, thank you to all of you who have listened and everybody who shares it. That does actually help make this little dream come a little bit closer to reality, which is something I've wanted to do, which is to create content and to be able to put some bucks in my pocket, but also to be able to go out and see other, you know, visit some conventions, you know, do some events, you know, do some giveaways on the podcast, offer you guys some promotional codes for stuff, that kind of thing. So first of all, again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You guys make this possible. Also, I am returning to streaming. This is the 1st of August when you guys will hear this, most likely. I will be returning to Twitch streaming on Saturday, August 3rd, 2024. So if you hear this, make sure you stop in, check the link in the description, follow me over on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib, and let's do some fun stuff over there, because not only is it my return to streaming after pretty much an entire month of not streaming through July, it's also going to be my birthday this weekend. So I'd really appreciate it if you guys would just take a minute to stop by. You don't have to stay for the entire thing, but I'm looking at trying to start somewhere around noon Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, and then just kind of run it as long as I can, you know, see what I can get accomplished during the day, what kind of fun stuff we can get into, what kind of shenanigans we can get done. And yeah, just enjoy spending the time with the streaming and internet community, because I'm going to be having a small get together with friends and family on Sunday. And Friday, I intend, we'll see if this actually happens, but Friday, I intend to just go and kind of putter around and do some, just, you know, it's like window shopping, essentially. I'm not really looking to buy a bunch of stuff. You know what I mean? I'm not really, I've got so much stuff currently that I need to get organized. I'm really not looking to add more shit to the pile. So I'm probably just going to go and like look at some cool stuff. Maybe check out, there's an anime themed bar that's nearby that I want to see. And it's a bar and restaurant. I want to check that out. It's little stuff around town just to do some stuff with my wife, or even if it's just by myself, if she's still busy. And maybe I'll go early and do some of the nerdier stuff, and then later on we can go and do some of the more, I don't know, you know, couples-friendly kind of stuff. Just hang out and enjoy the day. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, just so you know, this weekend, stream on August 3rd. Going to be going from noon till whenever-ish. And you guys are more than welcome to join. I'd love to see you guys pop in and say hello. And yeah, this podcast will be out a little later on today. So whenever you hear this, you know, make a note of it. Save the date, as it were, and pop on in to say hi. And yeah, that's, I think that's going to do it for now. But again, oh, real quick, don't forget to stop over to Patreon at patreon.com/WanderingOneStudios. If you'd like to support the channel and support the podcast, it's just $3 over there, which is actually way cheaper than supporting on Twitch. So if you wanted to support it and you're like, you know, I don't know how to do it, what's in my budget or whatever, if you got $3 that you feel like you can bless the channel with, that's awesome. If you don't worry about it. Just sharing the videos, I'm sorry, sharing the videos on Twitch, sharing the podcast with your friends and stuff like that, just telling other people about it and letting them get a chance to put their eyes and ears on it, that really helps the most. So if you can't help any other way, maybe once a week, just say, hey, I know this guy does this thing to, you know, to just a coworker, friend, whatever. That would mean the world to me. And I really do appreciate that because it does help the channel on Twitch and also the podcast grow. So thank you very much. Let's get into some podcast stuff, right? This is a weird week. So, as you guys know, I live in Florida. Florida is always weird because Florida has a very peculiar relationship with the weather. I think it's probably because we're like the appendix of the United States. So we're always causing trouble somewhere for no good reason. So, given that Floridians are also kind of wild and unhinged by nature, it would stand to reason that our weather patterns would be the same. And it's been pretty hot. Started much earlier than usual for the heat index to raise up here in Florida. But now we're going into August, and I mean, the temperatures are staying pretty consistent into the upper to mid, like the low to mid 90s most of the time, with some spikes that hit up into the like 100, 103, 104 degree range, depending on where you're living. The one funky thing about it, though, is there's like a tropical, not really a tropical depression, but there's something floating out, like a miasma of tropical weather floating out just off the coast of the, off the Caribbean Isles, I guess. And it's tracking to be named Hurricane Debbie. But it's been so largely disorganized that it doesn't seem like a threat. And that's one of the things they keep saying a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I always worry about that when they say like, hey, you need to get your shit together and get ready to move. I'm like, oh, they're really paying attention to this one, you know? But this one, they're like, yeah, you know, it's been fighting a lot of like dusty, you know, like dusty and hot air. It hasn't had a chance to create the perfect conditions for a hurricane. Like, that doesn't sound good. The closer it gets to us, though, you know what I mean? As the air starts to, you know, dry out, I guess, well, not dry out, but it stops to become as clouded with dust and the moisture starts to build up in the atmosphere. I'm like, they're not paying too much attention to this. They're like, we don't foresee it being an issue. I'm like, that's exactly when shit goes wrong. And Floridians are, like I said, they're notorious for hurricane parties, you know, people hunkering down and, you know, sheltering in place and whatnot. And it always ends up getting at least a couple dozen people every year killed because they just ignore the obvious and, you know, apparent dangers that are inherent with, you know, 75 mile an hour plus winds, throwing shit around, the rain, you know what I mean? The tornadoes that eventually fall off from the hurricane, that kind of thing. So, and that's what's coming my way this weekend. And I'm like, oh, that stands to reason as we go into the month of August that things would just go fucking bonkers. And the weather's just one part of it, kids. So strap in. We've got a lot of wildness that's already happening just before the first. And so I'm kind of glad in a way that this one's a little late because it gave me a couple more extra topics to dish on, which is it's what you want when you have a podcast, right? More shit to talk about. So, yeah. Potentially Hurricane Debbie on its way to the Florida coast, possibly the Gulf of Mexico. What a great way to start your birthday month, right? And moving on to like just some, I'll get to some of the other stuff that you know I'm chomping at the bit to talk about here in a moment. But I actually ran into this conversation the other day about the difference between sharing AI-generated art versus AI-generated music. And I'm kind of two minds when it comes to AI-generated music. AI-generated art, I mean, there are some instances where AI-generated art might serve a certain purpose. For example, one of my friends, a friend of the show, actually put something in our Discord channel regarding a world-building AI-generative application. So it has art and art assets that are cultivated by a select group of artisans, and those are used to be recombined into various scenarios. for role-playing games, for tabletop role-playing games, for example. Some people have, I don't know if anybody's familiar with tabletop role-playing games, pen and paper, Dungeons and Dragons is called a lot of different things. But some people I know actually have large projection tables where they can actually, like, basically it's like a giant TV, and you can project the map that you're going to use onto the television, and it's actually a big old table. Those look amazing. I could not ever afford one. They're insanely expensive. But if you're playing a game like that, being able to move your characters around on the board is pretty cool. so this project seems to be tailored towards something like that, where I need a forest setting with, you know, a castle and maybe a couple small huts and a lake and a river that comes off the lake. You kind of input these terms and then it builds this little world for you. Saves the dungeon master or game master, the person who leads these campaigns and stories, saves them from having to create and craft this entire thing. Also keeps the players from having to keep a persistent image in their head while they're trying to figure out what their next move is going to be, what their next action might be. It gives them a very palatable reference point to look at on the world and say, oh, I can put this here and move there, you know? And I think for something like that, where not only are you not scraping art from the entirety of the internet, it's being carefully cultivated and curated by a select group of artisans who would maybe, one person's really great at landscapes, another one's really great at buildings, drawing buildings. Another one's probably great with colors. Another one does really great, city folk kind of things, you know, like populace looking stuff. So if you need to have the world populated by some kind of imagery, you got that. And those people get paid. That was the other big thing. Those artists aren't just having their work stolen. They're being actively paid to create this content solely for the purpose of having it recombined by this AI model. That, I think, is fine. It's one of the few times where I think AI art is fine, because most of the time what it does is it just kind of pulls a bunch of different reference points from whatever you're trying to create. Like if you give it, feed it terms that I want it to look like this and this and this and this and this, it just goes and references everything it can scramble off the internet, pulls it together, and then recombines it. And that's why you see them when sometimes they have like six arms or whatever, like, you know, nine fingers on one hand, shit like that, because it's struggling to get it right. But this is kind of a different track from that. When it comes to AI generated music, to a certain degree, a lot of music, especially if it's not live, and especially if you're not using physical instrumentation, if you're using anything that's digital, you're essentially kind of, you're not using AI necessarily, but there are a lot of predictive tools and whatnot that work in there. There are bleed effects. There are overlaps. There are, even in this digital suite that I use called Reaper, there are different tools and tricks that you can use that are built into the program that allow you to smooth out audio, drop things in and out, raise levels. I still have yet to really explore the depths of what this can do. So there's a little bit of artificial intelligence in a weird, in like a really very small way. It's already kind of built into, especially, you know, music that's digitally created. But I have this really interesting phenomenon that I've seen lately where people will do, they'll pull like a template for a song. For example, let's say like 50s beach music, right? They'll pull that template, you know, during this era, these types of instruments were used. These times the types of sounds came through them. These are the types of, you know, meters and the different types of meter that the music would be composed in. And then, you know, you get a sampling of various like lyrical themes, you know, whether it's hanging out at the beach or going to a party or going on a road trip, those kinds of things get kind of like filtered through. And I'm not 100% well versed in how they all combine together. But then I think there's like a data sampling that they pull and they go like, all right, so what we did was we pulled these sound patterns, we pulled these lyrical patterns. You can kind of pick and choose and cut and paste them together like a Mad Lib, and then you can make a song. I don't know how I feel about that. Because on the one hand, some of the stuff I've heard is incredibly hilarious and creative. On the other hand, how much of this is, you know, maybe if they worked it the same way as the program that I mentioned earlier, right? How much of this is being cultivated by musicians and by instrumentalists who are being paid to create this content specifically for this purpose? I've been trying to find a link to what the actual name of it is, but for some reason it seems like it just evaporated out of the Discord. Anyway, there's a couple of AI-generated YouTube channels that have come up, music YouTube channels anyway, I should say. The music is created and pulled together, cobbled together by human beings, I guess, to some degree, but then also cultivated through like an AI filter that kind of puts it together. The stuff has very catchy, very 50s, like, or 60s pop kind of vibes, which I find to be fun things to listen to, all the way up into like the mid-70s, more psychedelic funk kind of stuff. But they're always wildly irreverent. And I get mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I know that they're doing this to bring some enjoyment and some silliness to it. The other hand, it's like, couldn't you have paid a person to do that? And I don't know that they didn't. I don't know that they didn't actually have somebody like, you know, sing a bunch of notes into, you know, whatever, you know, maybe a couple of phrases, and then the computer's able to overlap those notes with the words and make it sound good. But I just got to say, like, whenever you can pay people, right? Even if you're going to use their stuff for AI stuff, let them know what you're doing, be upfront about it, and give them commensurate pay for the work that they're about to do. It's one of the things that's become a real big problem lately when it comes to creative industries in general, but music and art in particular, and films are really bad about it. And the art world itself has also gotten worse about it lately. I mean, one of the bigger issues that I've heard about have been like actors who've had their likenesses taken and scrubbed from audition reels, or maybe they were in a pilot or something and they got, you know, paid for it, or even if they didn't, you know, sometimes they'll have their images scrubbed out of that thing or pulled out of that thing and then used later for other purposes. I think one of the more impactful ones was something around the hit show Mighty Morphin Power Rangers back in the day. Some of you may have heard this story, some of you may not have. So for those of you who are unaware, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was based off of a show that was first created in Japan. The Americanized version, they had to, you know, reshoot and localize some of these scenes because obviously, you know, the people that were in the show spoke Japanese and were Japanese, and they wanted to make it appeal to an Americanized youth audience. So one of the things they did was they also recast the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers mentor and leader, essentially. A character called Zordon of Eltor, I think is what his name was. Zordon of Eltar. I got a little sideways there. And that person who was cast to play that role was an actor by the name of David Fielding. So he's been on record as having protested the amount of money that Haim Saban made off of the production of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Made less than $1,000 for being one of the biggest characters in that show. He worked apparently for one day. They put him in this suit and makeup and then shot him behind this kind of screen. His image is supposedly a projection of a person or of a being. And they hired him to do that. And then they basically just reworked the imaging so it doesn't look like you actually see his mouth move. You can't see his mouth moving clearly with words that he's saying. They paid him for $150 for the day of work, and then after that he got some minor residuals, but never, I mean, he was like less than $1,000, he claims, as a whole. But Saban made $1 billion after the first year. So yeah, it's pretty crazy to do that kind of thing. And because they were able to just pull his image out of the footage that they had already taken, they never had to pay him again. He showed up one day, worked one day, and then they used that image for, I think they've actually used that image for about like 5 or 6 years easy. If I remember correctly, he was also in the film and they just kind of used the same effect, but just cleaned it up a little bit more so it was more polished. But yeah, AI can pull AI can pull your imagery, your voice and whatnot, and cobble it together and make somebody a buttload of money, and you get screwed in the process. Well, yeah, that's not fair at all. But I mean, that's the one thing that I wonder about when it comes to AI generated music, as well, because who knows if that's not a real person who had saying some of that stuff? Who knows that maybe they're real people and instrumentalists who are actually crafting the music, but maybe it's just the composition and the lyrics that are being scrubbed through AI. On the one hand, like, yeah, it's one thing to kind of, speed run the creative process if you're just trying to get some craziness out there. And you're actually paying, live musicians and live singers to perform the piece. I think that's a little bit different ball of wax right there. But it's hard to tell what's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? It can be so incendiary, especially if you're an artist, a musician, a singer, a composer, and you're just watching people get rich off of taking other people's ideas, recombining them through a computer, and then spitting it out like so much baloney. It's like, yeah, this is basically like that prepackaged ham loaf that you get at the deli. You just took a bunch of stuff from other parts and pieces, ground it up in a grinder, shaped it together, and then just spat it out. It doesn't mean that there isn't any glimmer of creativity in there, because obviously you pulled from creative people, but ultimately you haven't really created anything. I mean, any more than whoever made sausage or bologna has created anything that's wholly unique, except for the random assemblage or percentage of the ingredients that they use each time. But yeah. Fun stuff when it comes to AI. It's a brave new world out there, everybody. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Let's get into some of the other meatier stuff before we pop into some gaming news to wrap it up. You guys have known that it's political. The election season is actually like just basically a political stew that's going around on media. No matter where you are, you can barely avoid it. If you're on Facebook, if you're on TikTok, if you're on Instagram, if you're just watching the cable news, if you're listening to the radio, even if you're listening to like your favorite playlist on Spotify or Pandora, you're probably bound to run across some kind of political advertisement, some kind of something associated with the election. And it's been weird, man. It's been really weird. So now we've all known by now that Kamala Harris, current vice president and presumptive Democratic national nominee for the presidency, is just gaining steam. Like, she is plowing forward. The Democratic base is energized, as are a lot of people who don't necessarily identify along those political lines or those ideologies. Women of color, and also who are not, are banding together to show their support and solidarity. The LGBTQ community has gotten an extra boost. Communities of color across the board, you're starting to see more people turn out in higher numbers because of the wave of excitement behind Kamala Harris. And it's an interesting time right now, because I do believe that, at the very least, you should give a woman a chance. If you can't say anything else positive, how bad could she do compared to everything? And I just gesticulate to all of American presidential history. Like, how much worse do you think she could possibly do this job? She's obviously been competent enough as the vice president that she hasn't had any issues. It's really bizarre to assume that suddenly she gets behind the desk in the Oval Office, that she's just going to have a brain fart and forget how to president all of a sudden. That whole concept is just mind-boggling to me. And people think that for some reason, once it, she's in the passenger seat, right, the whole time. And then as soon as you put her behind the wheel, all of a sudden her hands turn to feet. She forgets, how to, look through her eyeballs and can't drive. Like, that doesn't make any sense. I've never understood that line of thinking, and it's pretty insane to even say it out loud. But she's gaining steam. There's a lot of speculation about who she's going to pick as her running mate. This comment has been said by not just Donald J. Trump, but other political commentators and pundits, that whom you pick for vice president doesn't necessarily affect a ticket. I think it actually could in this particular instance. The right political confluence of, you know, ideology, charm, mass appeal, and solid policy decisions are going to have to come together in a single candidate for vice president in order for Kamala to really stand more securely than she is right now. Her footing is pretty solid because there's a large base of people who are energized and enthusiastic about her potential and burgeoning presidency. But I think you have to look at the fact that picking the wrong person can really fuck you over if you're a candidate. And to that, let's go ahead and turn over to our buddy, James David Bowman, or as he likes to call himself now, J.D. Vance. And all the weirdness that surrounds this guy is definitely bad news for Trump and the Republican National Convention. And it's kind of funny to me. On the one hand, it's a little tragic because there's a part of me that kind of wants to see a fair fight, but then a part of me is like, yeah, fuck them. they've had plenty of time to fight fair this whole time, and they've chosen not to, just to sling mud and, you know, spread lies. It'd be one thing to throw insults. You kind of expect a little bit of that kind of mudslinging to go on, but like just spreading outright lies, having zero policy initiatives or ideas to confer to the people, just speaking in rhetoric and just hyperbole. There's no actual real substance behind anything that this idiot says when he's on stage. And J.D. Vance is actually kind of scarier because he actually does have some solid ideas about what he wants to see done and how he feels about policy on certain fronts. And that to me is actually more terrifying than Donald Trump, is the medium smart people that he ends up getting to follow in his wake. The one thing that's going to hurt J.D. is one, he's a weird dude. And two, he's flip-flopped so much from being an avid anti-Trump guy, as he called himself, to now literally kissing the ring, both his finger and the O-ring on Donald. And yeah, it's pretty gross. And he's a weird dude. The hilarity behind the memification of this dude's life, and the jokes about him, you know, having sex with a couch they've been just fantastic. It's kind of funny to see that, like, something that's allegedly not true, but has generated so much negative buzz, seeing how much that can affect a guy that Trump, you know, has been coddling up under his wing, you know what I mean, and no buddy buddy with, and now he's kind of like, this guy's a little radioactive, man. And it's off of something that, like I said, it could be true, could be not, but there was the thing where they printed the story and said that that was what it was, and then it was retracted, and they're like, we had to retract it because we couldn't prove that it happened, but we also couldn't not prove that it happened, not prove that it didn't happen. So they're like, we don't know what to do. And the more he starts talking about, you know, especially his very 1950s era views on women and their responsibilities in the household, families, and the presumption that he's the only one who knows what works is a little disgusting, to say the least, to myself and many other people who have voiced their opinions in polls and in news shows, several pundits saying that he is he's got enough of a political presence over the last few years that, if, you know, again, the same situation people were speaking about with Biden and Harris, if Trump becomes the president and J.D. Vance is his vice president and Trump is in advanced years and he passes away before the presidency's over, then J.D. Vance moves up the notch. And that's when things can get really terrifying. And so it's good to me to watch him kind of get taken down a few notches, and seeing the confidence in him from Donald Trump being shaken and him wavering is absolutely delicious. I'm excited to see what happens. I kind of hope that he gets shaken off and they go like, well, we had to pick a new guy instead of J.D. Vance. And he has to go crawling back into his, you know, bag of, you know, butt kissers to find somebody. It's going to be funny shit. And if you want to see how funny it can get, we've heard the, you know, by now you probably heard the detraction saying that Trump is going to drop out of the September debate against Kamala Harris. They weren't really, like I said, they weren't on their toes and ready to box with her. But she's all scrap, you know what I mean? And she's got power behind the punches. So she's ready to go. She's taken a couple good shots at him in the media over the last week that I know have his cage rattled. But it's no more apparent that this guy has absolutely zero to say and zero way of backing it up than if you were able to catch his interview session at a conference for the National Association of Black Journalists in Chicago, Illinois, this past week. Oh my God, is it a shit show? And it starts off almost instantaneously, like almost from the first three sentences that were spoken as he took his place on the stage. Like within the first three sentences, he said he was just already off to the races. Yeah, he couldn't help himself. It's just, he got in a room full of black people and he was just like looking around and you could just almost see his pursed, wrinkled little lips getting ready to just say, niggers. And you're like, wow, I'm telling you, one day one of them is going to just let it rip. And I'm praying that I'm watching it live when it happens. I might actually have a heart attack and die from the sheer hilarity of it all. But you could just see the building frustration behind his wrinkled face as he was trying to keep it together. And these three professional journalists and interviewers were on the panel popping questions at him. And all they did was ask him a question and then try to keep him on track. And you can watch him flailing and just literally melting down inside. Like he was so close to just saying what he was really thinking that he kept repeating himself over and over again when they would ask him a question. I think one of the questions was, I have to watch the video again. My wife and I were watching it last night, and I was tired, but I was trying to keep up with it. It was something to do with an economic question. He veered off of the main point and kept talking about interest rates. And he hit the point of interest rates maybe like four or five times back to back to back. But the question had nothing to do with necessarily that. And then, you know, when he's asked about J.D. Vance and whether he had faith in J.D. to actually do the vice presidential job, he waffled so hard. All he could do is just basically lick J.D. Vance's butthole and talk about his biography. Like he memorized J.D. Vance's, you know, bio and was just spitting out everything that happened to the dude since he was a kid until he joined up with Trump. He was like, and then he went to college and then he got married and he's got a beautiful wife, by the way, you know, and then I'm like, this is the weirdest non-answer I think I've ever heard. But if you're paying attention, that's how he does every interview. That's how he does every rally. That's how he does every speech. He's almost never got anything of any substance or, you know, weight that to offer to an interviewer or to respond to a question with. It's just a bunch of gobbledygook and jargon and, you know, a bunch of platitudes and, like I said, hyperbole, sometimes just outright lies. And it's never more apparent than when he's being called to task to answer a simple question that could require just a yes or no answer. And he couldn't even pull it together long enough to do that. And then when he was being pushed and tested, that's when he started pulling out his bag of tricks of, you know, you kept me waiting here. I was waiting for 35 minutes because your equipment didn't work. And he's like, okay, so you're going to blame us for a malfunction. Like an equipment malfunction can happen to anybody. You know what I mean? It can happen at any time. You know what I mean? You could have been stuck in the bathroom for 35 minutes because your zipper didn't work right. And you had to get a new pair of pants brought to you. That's a thing that could have happened. That would have been an equipment malfunction. We're going to make the dude feel bad because he got a shit pair of pants? No. We pick it up, we roll with it. But he kept picking at that, and over again, he would reiterate that the sound was awful. The mics weren't working. He couldn't hear people, you know. And then, of course, you know, the panelists that were on there, most of them were probably very well-respected journalists just in their own right. One of them, on the other hand, I felt like I had a sneaking suspicion I'd seen her before. And then, while I didn't know her name, it stuck out to me. She's another one of these, just basically these bootlicking, you know, black commentators that they get to pump up Trump. Her name's Harris Faulkner. She works for Fox News Channel. And I'm like, okay, I now get, if you watch the video, it does refer to her a couple times by her first name, Harris, which is, that's a fun one. But she's the lady on the far right of your screen when you see it. I'll actually post a link to the video in the description if you want to watch it. It's as nightmarish as it sounds. But he's basically kind of kissing her ass while she's kissing his, because she's like, yeah, I know. I'm having a hard time hearing you too. No, bitch, don't. Because the other two ladies who are right there, and they're not further than maybe 15 feet apart from each other on the stage. 15, maybe 20 feet. And they're suddenly complaining that they can't hear. Trump is complaining. Harris is complaining. But the two ladies in the middle, I can hear you just fine. You know what I mean? And he's playing deaf, like, huh? What did you say? I'm like, yeah, you heard Harris from across the fucking stage further than you did the lady who's sitting like two seats away from you. Get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. It's a nightmarish performance. And then he, like I said, he flames off about, just between the rambling, incoherent, you know, answers, quote unquote answers that he was giving. And then his constant attacks on the lateness of the event being, you know, held, the quality of the equipment, you know, there was also like, you know, the attitudes, like he wanted people to kiss his fucking ass. And like, dude, you walked out there and you stood there. He walked out so weird. I swear he's actually an alien. He walked out and, you know, because it's not a Trump rally and it's a room full of black reporters. Nobody's up there just going like, yay, Donald. So he stood there waiting for applause. And then when it didn't come, then he just, oh, I guess I should sit down. Like, yes, sit the fuck down. We got an interview to do. You're worried about things being late. What are you waiting for, like a 3-minute applause break so you could just stand there and wave? No one gives a fuck. Sit down. It was so weird. It was so incredibly weird. And like, you know, again, like I say, J.D. Vance is a weird guy. A lot of these Republicans, especially the bigger mouthpieces, are just some weird, freaky, just bizarre ass people. I just don't know how they happen to be people just because they're so damn confusing and weird. I'll give you a couple little pinpoint moments to look for throughout this whole nightmare that I promise you, if you get a chance to watch it and if you get a chance to show this to a Trump supporter, this would make your week, because now you have to ask them, explain this. Watch the 3-4 minute rambling, whatever it is that he says after being asked a question, and explain to me what you understood him to mean. In regards to answering the question, I think he only half answered two of the questions that were posed to him the entire interview process. I'd be very interested to find somebody who was able to cook up an actual intelligible response out of anything he said the entire time. Most of it was gobbledygook, and it's just bizarro world if it wasn't. He said that he was also invited under false pretenses because allegedly Kamala Harris was supposed to be able to be there in person. But then it was supposed to be over Zoom and this, that, and the other. There's a little confusion as to what actually happened there. I don't know if he was confused or if they were confused, whatever was going on. But yeah, none of it seemed to come together or coalesce for old Donnie boy quite as well as he was hoping. And, yeah, he just did a lot of dodges. You know what I mean? When he didn't have anything cohesive to say, which was most of the time, he would just avoid the question almost entirely. Yeah, it was so weird, dude. It was just so weird. He was also asked if he thought that, Kamala Harris was a DEI hire. Trump, then he flipped it around on the interviewer and was like, define DEI, define it. And so she did. It's an acronym for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And then he's like, yeah, well, what does that mean? It's like, are you a simpleton? Do you not understand what was going on? Like, when I said what I said, why do you, if this is a term that you and your cronies want to use as a way to denigrate people of color who are in positions of power, you should probably know what the fuck it actually means. She was just short of saying that. And I loved the reactions from the lead interviewer, whose name I couldn't find right away. I'm sure I'll find it later. But she's a lady in the light blue business suit. If you watch the video, trust me, it's worth it. She looks over at him like a couple times, like she's like, I wish I could slap this motherfucker right now. And it's hilarious. So when this question is asked as to whether or not Kamala Harris was a DEI hire, like I said, he kind of waffles and just asks for a definition over and over again. He doesn't have anything to say. And then he goes after, like, he's disputing her racial lineage, which was fun. Because here's what he says. This is a quote. She was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black. And now she wants to be known as black. This idiot said in a room full of black people that Kamala Harris turned black. And all I could think about when I was listening to this was this particular scene. If you don't know it, it's from the Academic Decathlon and Billy Madison, the Adam Sandler hit from back in the day.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
That's all I could think about the entire time. I'm like, I wish that somebody in the audience had the wherewithal to find that clip and play it over a speaker or something so he could hear it. It was horrible. And it got progressively worse. As the interview went on, it just got worse and worse and worse. He even claimed that the Democratic Party was willing to have abortions into the 9th month of pregnancy, that they were letting babies die on the operating table. You know what I mean? Just, it was so wild and just unhinged. When you see it, you're going to lose your mind because you'll think that I made this shit up until you watch it. I promise you 100% this is actual stuff that he said and that actually happened in the world. You've got to watch the video. It's just, oh man. As painful as it'll be to watch, it's really funny to watch him do the harmonica hands and then to stumble over his own words multiple times, to repeat himself numerous times, to misdirect and try to deflect and just to obfuscate the entire point of the question, to the point where I think they get tired. And I think that's what happens a lot of times when people talk to this idiot or anybody who's kind of like him, right? Like, they are so expert at dodging and doublespeak and trying to confound the point that you're attempting to make or to weasel, but to get out of them. Like, trying to get anything out of them is like trying to, you know, hold like an oiled eel. And when they're as good at it as he is, a lot of times you can kind of let that slide because people just get tired and go, fuck it, it's not worth the effort. But you could tell there were a couple times when they pinned him down and he couldn't quite get away. And I was trying to describe it. The best way I could describe it is like when you ever catch a little kid, or when you were like a little kid and you got busted for something, or your sibling or your friend got busted for something and they get caught by an adult. And they're trying to lie their way out of it so fast that nothing they say makes sense. But they're talking really fast and saying, just throwing a lot of words that they know at somebody. It's just this giant, like, word soup that comes out of them. That's what happens to Trump. You watch it, you'll get it. And you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's why. But that's why the dummies that love him so much. Because he sounds like he's making a lot of sense because he talks so swiftly that it's hard to keep track of what kind of bullshit he's saying. So you almost go, huh, I never thought about it that way. And what your brain is trying to tell you is you never thought about it that way because your brain actually has thoughts. You would actually think about this. It's just second nature to him. Gobbledygook and bullshit is like another language for him. I'm surprised they don't teach it in like Rosetta Stone or something. But yeah, it's a fucking shit show. And it was funny to watch him get backed into a corner and just be terrified of having to actually say something that he'd have to stick to. You know, couldn't answer anything about policy, couldn't make a substantive statement about whether or not he supported J.D. Vance if he were actually have to step down from the office of the presidency, couldn't explain whether or not he thought Kamala Harris was a DEI hire. And he had no substance for anything. And it was just beautiful to watch him flop around on that stage like a fish. I was having a blast. So, yeah, good times. If you're curious about what a debate with Kamala Harris would have looked like, this is what you should watch, because you probably won't see it in September, because bet money he doesn't have any way to stand up to the ass kicking he would get at her hands. Like, it's going to be glorious. So if you're curious about it, what that would have looked like, please watch the video that's going to be in the description for the podcast. I guarantee you it's worth it. And we're going to close this off with some other weird news. I mean, you guys know that I've been playing Destiny 2. We're going to get some video game stuff in here for a little bit. I've been playing Destiny 2 for a while. Even though I was kind of nervous about it, nervous is probably the mild way of putting it. I ended up picking up the most recent DLC content, and I have been enjoying it a lot, playing it with my wife and some friends, and it's been a good time. The story's actually been good. Some of the mechanics that are in there, that they put in there, while not entirely fresh, have been at least a little bit of a change of pace, and I've enjoyed playing that. But then, of course, because it's Bungie, right, and into any pot that they get a hold of, they're going to take at least a little bit of a shit in it. They have decided to start laying off people again, and that happened over the weekend. And yeah, this latest layoff sent 220 people out of work. According to the percentages, that's 17% of the company's workforce. This is a decision handed down from Bungie CEO Pete Parsons. He also said that 155 more people in other departments are going to be rolled into Sony Interactive Entertainment. Nice. You remember about this time last year, more like near October, they laid off 100 people just with an email? Yeah. So if you add this to that, it means 40% of Bungie's total workforce is gone over the last year. It was about 1,200 people that worked for them before that layoff last year, and the delay happened for the Final Shape expansion that I was just mentioning. Yeah, and they always, again, they're going to be blaming the costs of, you know, operations and, you know, lower profits and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, you probably would have had better profits if you had been listening to your players all this time, and instead of trying to squeeze us at every single turn, maybe just provided solid content that we actually wanted to see, wanted to play. And you waited so long that the Final Shape is actually brilliant, and it's a lot of fun, and the story's compelling. The almost forced cooperative campaign is actually pretty damn fun to do. But you've waited so long, you've burned so many bridges that people are over it now. And still, here they go. Like, again, they did it before. They're doing it again. I think this is now the third time they're going to run back into Sony's pocket. And Sony already wrote them off as a bad bet once, but now they're like, okay, we'll take you back again. So Sony hasn't learned its lesson either. They're going to get burned by Bungie because Bungie just can't help themselves. But now here they are. They said that they're working with Sony to spin out an incubation project, as they call it. You know, after they already fucked up Lightfall's expansion last year and then, you know, bungled the entire opportunity to release Marathon, which would have been their answer to games like Apex Legends or what is it? There's another one that's out there. It's like a multiplayer, you know, extraction type shooter. The Finals, I think, is one of them. It's games like that. You know, and so they were trying to pull that together, and that didn't work. But nope, they are still dicking around. So between what they haven't done for Destiny 2, what they're obviously not going to do for Destiny 3, at least not anytime soon, and what they're probably not going to end up being able to pull together for Sony, I think somebody's going to end up having to buy Bungie, like, outright. It's like, you know, you are now, like, I would be so thrilled. Even if Sony bought them, but I'd be so thrilled to see Xbox buy them and just turn them inside out. It probably won't happen considering the amount of pushback that Xbox and Microsoft in general got over the purchasing of several studios over the last few years. So far back as like being challenged in federal court for attempting to create a monopoly. So they probably wouldn't lunge as hard at something like Bungie unless they were really going to take it and pick it the fuck apart. But yeah, they definitely need to just be bought out at this point. They don't have nearly enough. I don't think they have nearly enough strong leadership that's willing to make difficult decisions for the company and for the players. I think they're just, again, trying to make sure that their pockets stay fat and laying off people doesn't bother them at all. Like Bill Burr said, how fucking big's your yacht gotta be, right? Like, you won't take even 10% less so somebody else could have 2% more. Like, you could have, even if you know, I got that backwards. You wouldn't take 2% less so somebody else could have 10% more in their check. That's how greedy they are. Like, they would literally grab, they would grab every nickel they saw along the road before they would just hand somebody else a dollar. It's just, it's bizarre to me that that kind of thinking exists. And it's so prevalent too, particularly in corporate cultures. But, you know, it's so gross to see it in gaming culture. It's not unfamiliar. It's not foreign. It's certainly not new. But it, the more you start to see it highlighted, the more egregious it becomes. I mean, like it's, they just said in this article I pulled up, and this is from The Verge, but I've heard it reported in several other sources as well, including, I believe it was, Vox, IGN, Destructoid, they've all had something to say about it because games media, right? But yeah, I mean, 40% of your workforce is just gone. How do you do anything? Imagine if you lost 40% of your limbs. Just now, I snap my fingers, 40% of your limbs are gone. What do you do? How do you get around your house from day to day? You've had them all this time and then suddenly they just disappeared. How do you function? How do you not struggle for at least X amount of time before you can figure out how to move and manipulate things well enough to survive on your own? Right? So, I mean, using that example, just imagine that's what Bungie's done. Like, you know what I mean? They've cut off one entire arm, one knee below, one like leg below the knee and gouged out an eyeball. And they're like, I still got this. Like, I don't think so. I think you need some help. I think you need some real serious help. You need some support. You know what I mean? Or at least you need a motherfucker to take care of you. If you can't take care of yourself, you need a motherfucker to take care of you. Until you can figure out how to get back on your feet or foot, you need some help. And they're saying this, and they always try to fucking fly this off. It's like, we were trying to do this for the players. We were overly ambitious, our financial safety margins were subsequently exceeded, and we began running in the red. That's what the CEO has to say. Overly ambitious. No, bitch. You were greedy. You were greedy, and you could take a pay cut to keep people working on this game, and that would show good faith, and it would instill a lot of goodwill into the player base. But nah, I need my money. It's like a crackhead, you know? You got any more of them dollar bills? Hey, fuck you, dude. Ugh, so gross. It makes me really feel bad, too. I mean, obviously, this is an Xbox. Xbox has had its own problems with layoffs just recently. We talked about that last week, and it's really becoming quite a conundrum because it's not like shit's getting any cheaper. You know what I mean? If anything, it's getting more expensive, so we're paying more money to you to continue to use the service, and yet and still you can't keep people employed? What the fuck are you guys doing over there? Which has been one of the things that's been interesting to me. They used to be, when Xbox Game Pass was first announced. For those of you who aren't gamers, this is going to be a real quick, easy primer on what Game Pass is. So Game Pass is essentially Netflix for games. You pay a monthly subscription fee and you gain access to all this content that you can play. Simple, right? Just like you pay for Netflix or Hulu Plus or, you know, Disney Plus or whatever, right? You get pay your, you know, $12.99, $15.99, $18.99 a month, and you get to watch all the movies and TV shows that are on that service. Same thing here. Pay your $15.99 a month, you get to play all the video games that they have. So that content had worked really well. What they had done was when they initially started it, there was a promotional kind of thing where if you paid for 1 year of it, you could get two additional years for $1 a piece. Wife and I heard about that from a friend of ours, David Chapman, shout out. Love you, dude. He shouted out to us. We went ahead and subsequently signed up right away. We're like, as much as we play games and as many games as we play and want to have access to, having an access to an ever-expanding library of titles is a no-brainer. Essentially, what happened is we paid, if I remember, it's been a while, let's say it was like $130. I think it was actually like $120 for the entire year, or it was $15 per month. So you could buy a year at once for $120, or you could pay a la carte $15 a month. So for like $122, we got 3 years of Xbox Game Pass. That is a boatload of savings right there. And the cool thing about Game Pass was you could play a game until you were done with it, or even until you beat it. But if you wanted to keep it, you could buy it, and you could buy it at a discounted rate in a lot of instances because they knew that you were already invested in their ecosystem. Now it feels like they're just grabbing and grabbing and grabbing and grabbing. So I looked at, you know, we also have the Nintendo Switch. It's an easy console to port around. You know, family's always on the go. For a while, my wife was traveling for business. Every now and again, I would travel out of town for whatever reason, whether it was a convention or go visit, hang out with friends. Or, you know, like once I went to Chicago, once I went to San Diego, you know, a while back I went down to St. Augustine, not a big road trip, but it's a thing. And maybe this year I'll be able to go. I doubt I'll be able to afford TwitchCon this year, but maybe I'll get to go to at least one convention or visit a friend or family member somewhere out in the world. The Switch is great. And Nintendo Switch also has a similar kind of thing. It's not called Game Pass. They have some ungodly long name for it, like Nintendo Online Family Expansion, blah, 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 blah. They could really work on their nomenclature for this kind of thing. But essentially, it's the same idea. The wife and I, we can put it together. You pay $80 one time, and you can add up to eight. You can have up to eight total people on this thing. So myself and seven other people. So myself, my wife, I think one of the kids is going to join up. Probably two of the other kids will join up. You know, I think one of our friends is going to join as well. Like, just give us $15, you know what I mean? Or $10 or whatever. That covers your cost of it, you know, because it's 10, you know, it's eight. If you, you know, cut it in, you know, into equal pieces, it's really just $10. But we only have like four or five people who join. So pay us $15. We'll throw it to the thing, call it good. You have access to all the games that they have available that are for free, which they have pretty good selection of, including games that go back as far as the original Nintendo Entertainment System, all the way up to, you know, the N64, and you think they're bringing GameCube games in as well. So you've got like a large library of just free games that you can play. Plus, you have access to every piece of digital content that we buy. So I don't buy a lot of games, but I have some games that I bought that I was just like, oh, this is cool. I buy it online. Everybody can play it. It's infinitely better value, at least compared to Game Pass. While Game Pass has the larger library of games, this gives me the ability to let more people play more recent games that they would want to try out without having to pay extra shit for it. Now, I can almost guarantee at a certain point Nintendo might look at this because they are Nintendo, and they'll be like, yeah, you're going to have to buy something. Which is one of the reasons why Mario games never depreciate in value. They are always $60 no matter what happens. Like, you could try today to pick up like the first Mario game ever on the Nintendo Switch. I believe it was Super Mario Galaxy. I can't remember for sure. But you could pick up whatever the first launch game was for that. I almost guarantee you it's $60. So yeah, if you want the game, you're going to have to buy it eventually. Somebody's going to have to pay some money for it. But I think that when I'm looking at these kinds of a la carte services and whatnot, or even just like games as a service, I find it really interesting that I'm making decisions about whether or not I want to continue with them on how they treat their employees and their players. obviously care about how they treat me because I'm spending money in their ecosystem. But as I've grown older, maybe a little bit oddly enough, I got older and more empathy started creeping in. I start feeling more for the people who are getting their jobs snatched out from underneath them. I think the other biggest thing too is because it's been so difficult for me to find a job, even just a restaurant job. I try to get a job at the, I think I've mentioned this before, try to get a job at the gas station, sincerely, like less than a 3 mile drive as the crow flies. It's maybe 2 miles. And they were like, no. I just wanted to, like, seriously, I'd be like, dude, I'll sweep the floors. I'll stock the counter, you know, stock the counters and the candy and shit like that. I don't need a lot of responsibility. I just need just job to put a little bit of bucks in my pocket. They're like, nah. And I've seen at least 12 different individual faces over the last year since I started actively looking for a job. Walk in and out of that store. Some of them have been there the whole time. Most of them have rotated out. But yeah, my application is always shoveled to the bottom. And so I look at how people treat, corporations treat their people is a big thing for me. Because it's also indicative of what the work culture is like there too. And, you know, informs my decisions as a consumer. Like if I go to your restaurant, right? And I hear a manager, you know, haranguing an employee in front of other employees or customers, I don't eat there. I know what that's like because I've actually had that happen to me. You know, and I didn't do anything wrong. All I did was ask the boss. Here's the funny thing. I asked for more work. I asked the boss, hey, can I get trained to do this job? Because I want to work more and I'd like to be able to do this thing. And then he went off on me and literally just lied about me. Said I was a bad employee, that I was showing up late, that I wouldn't take extra shifts. I'm like, that's not true. I'm a great employee. I get great reviews from everybody that I work with and all the the customers that come in. I come here sometimes days early. Like one time I came into work early because I had the day wrong on the schedule and I stayed and worked. I could have gone home and just had the night off. I could have fucked around downtown and just gotten drunk and then taken the bus home. No, I stayed and worked anyway. And then I came back on my scheduled day. You know, all the things he was saying were patently false, but he did that. And so when I think about that experience and how much it impacted me, it also affects the way that I look at other companies and corporations. And even when I look around at jobs I might want, I look at how the management that I can see there, I'm pretty observant for the most part. I look at how they treat the people that work for them. And now seeing the way that Microsoft is treating the people that have worked for them so hard, seeing the way that Bungie is treating the people that work for them so hard, it pisses me off that I actually felt like it was getting better and I got invested again only for it to get worse. It's like we paid them all this money to have access to this gaming content and then they were just like, hey, remember that thing we did that pissed everybody off? Well, now that we got your money, fuck these guys too. I'm like, fuck, they got us again. And the biggest problem I have with it is because they play on our emotions. You know, like the cooperative aspect of this most recent patch for Bungie has been amazing. It's been one of the favorite things I've seen Bungie do in a while is incentivize you, not require you, but incentivize you to play this game with your friends and to make it a cooperative experience, a team-driven experience. And that's been a lot of fun for myself and my friends who've played through the story, you know? And so it's really disgusting to see that they don't apply that same logic to their own employees. I don't understand. And it's really making it difficult for me as a gamer and, you know, as a consumer and as a streamer, you know, to justify whether or not I want to actively support these platforms, support these companies that are bad actors, you know? And then again, now we have another strike coming up. The Voice Actors Guild is going on strike. SAG-AFTRA is joining them and backing them on the strike. But yeah, that was another job that I was looking for. I think I mentioned it last week. Applied to Romero Games in an attempt to try to find a voice acting job. And now, you know, everybody's on strike. I don't want to be the guy to cross the picket line. You know what I mean? What if I actually need these folks to, you know, need a little bit of their goodwill at some point to find a job or, you know, and to get a foothold or even a toehold in this medium that I love so much. even if I could never play video games again, if I could at least be involved in them at some point, you know, in some manner, that would be a dream of mine. And if I cross the lines, that could blackball me forever. I don't want that. So now is another opportunity that's closing. So, you know, like, you know, and then it's not all gloom and doom. There's definitely other things that I can and will be able to do, and I will be able to pull together. But, you know, it can get really frustrating at times to look around and go, well, what the fuck, man? Is there anything that's decent anymore? Is there anybody who's trying to do the right thing? And I know that there are, but, you know, it does get bleak every now and again. I guess the only thing you can really do is try to be the best person that you can be every day and try to be a better person today than you were the day before. And that's not going to work all the time. Everybody has their moments. We're all human. Life happens. Things get in the way. I guess the thing I can leave you with is it can get better, and it will if we all are willing to put in a little bit of effort towards it. Let's leave with that positive thought. And I don't think the podcast is overwhelmingly negative, even though Lord knows I seem to be trying. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this podcast. If you did, again, please feel free to rate it wherever you see it. Share it with a friend. Write in at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios and let me know what you think. I'd really appreciate to hear your comments, your questions, you know, if your concerns, if you ask for advice, I'd be down to answer those too. And hopefully we can get enough that I can put a Patreon exclusive episode up. That'd be amazing. But I might even pull some of them and address them during the regular podcast. So write in, you might have a shot at getting in on the free episode. How's that sound? All right. This weekend. So today is August 1st, 2024. This weekend, Saturday, August 3rd, 2024. I'll be doing a stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib for my birthday. Hooray for me. I made it, and hopefully you guys will be able to stop in and join me there. And if you can't, like I said, please feel free to share the podcast, share the stream, and let people know what you think. You can even share the Patreon with them and let them know that they can check it out there. There's plenty of stuff that you can check out if you're a first-time subscriber or follower. If you decide you want to subscribe, you could have a 7-day free trial. Check out everything that's over there for free for a week. That's a huge value, so go do that. Give it a look. And then let me know what you think. All right, until next time, this has been a Wandering One podcast. I've been Link Flores. You've been amazing. And I hope you guys have a wonderful week. Happy birthday to me, and I'll see you further on down the road. Peace.